Our eyes turn to the press as we look for information in a world that nothing makes sense anymore. Civil War, the cameraman. Welcome.
Guys, welcome to the,
welcome to the 180 cast.
The third first episode.
The third first episode.
Of the 180 cast.
That's right.
I'm Chris.
I'm Tomas.
I'm James.
And today, if you couldn't tell from our just absolutely stellar description of both films, we will be discussing the 2024 release by director Alex Garland, Civil War, and the very recent release by director Buster Keaton from 1928, The Cameraman. If you don't know what this show is, which makes sense because this would be the first episode we release, basically every week we're three friends and we're going to sit down and discuss two different films, one that comes out in the present, one that in the past released, and they're going to be thematically linked. Not necessarily super strongly thematically linked, but in theory they'll
sometimes
be thematically linked. There will at least be something similar between the two of them. So, if you can't tell by these two films, we're going to be talking about two journalism-centered films, kind of. There are cameras in both films.
And there are cameras of war in both films.
Yeah. Mm. So, but before we get to that, you guys want to talk about some news of the week? There's some pretty exciting stuff that went on in the film world this week. The first thing being that everybody's favorite bloody filmmaker, Quentin Tarantino, who has committed himself to directing 10 films, and that's it. He's not doing any more. He's out after 10.
Don't ask how many movies he's currently released. Don't check his letterbox.
Yeah.
It is 10. It's already 10.
So,
he just counts Kill Bill as one movie.
Yeah. So his final film was supposed to be one called The Movie Critic, starring apparently Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Paul Walter Hauser, basically anybody who breathes in Hollywood. It's been canceled. It's done. He's canned
it.
He's out of here.
Not good enough.
He said, oh, I looked at my letterbox. Looks like I've already done 10 films. Bye, everybody. So long. He's off to Ibiza, and he's going to live on a beach for the rest of his life. No, he's canceled his final movie. Do you guys, what do you think? You guys have any thoughts on?
I think that he needs to reset his mindset or we're never getting the 10th film.
That's where I land. I think that it's going to be one of those things where it's like, well, it's my final one. It has to be really big, and it has to be really bold, and it's got to be something new. And by trying to do that, he's never going to be satisfied and is going to spiral.
It's going to be like the state of Star Wars movies. Like, I'm just not going to believe him anymore if he says a movie's coming out.
Yeah, that's fair.
I guess, what is, like, the reason for this creative limitation that he's put on himself? Like, does it make him more productive?
From my understanding, it was something along the lines of, like, film should always be moving forward. There should always be new voices in film. So I'm only going to make 10 so that I can create space for new filmmakers to come up and make things, which...
Okay.
Makes, I think, in theory, makes a little bit more sense.
Doesn't feel like the right way to use the platform.
No, but I think that in the like the way that things were a decade ago in terms of filmmaking, I think that that makes a little bit more sense. But now, because content creation, filmmaking has become so like anybody can do it, even more so than a decade ago.
Yeah, it is quite accessible.
Doesn't, right? Like you have people like the Daniels, for example, who came through YouTube basically and directed the biggest movie of 2 years ago.
Yeah,
there's a lot of young new voices right now.
And I don't think that any of them, and to be fair, not to speak for the young new voices, but I don't think Martin Scorsese and Hayao Miyazaki and you know, Steven Spielberg announced a new film. Like, I don't think those people making new movies is taking away from some of that stuff.
Some might say that the young filmmakers would be rather disappointed.
I'd be pretty upset if all of them were like, you know what, let's give some more of these young people. You know, Colin Trevorrow, he needs more airtime.
I have no idea who that is.
He's the guy who did Jurassic World 3? 2?
Yeah, he did something else recently.
Yeah.
I guess.
Zack Snyder, he needs more airtime.
Oh.
With Rebel Moon Part 2 out.
I can't believe we didn't watch that movie this week.
Should have. Let's start again. Let's do another episode one.
Another episode one.
Yeah.
So. Wouldn't it be more? Isn't there any way that he could just like bring anyone onto the project with him, like a young filmmaker, to get exposure?
That would be a more interesting thing to me because
young actors.
The other idea too is that like he said he's only going to direct 10 films, so he's not going to stop writing. I mean, he's written. If you look at his writing credits, they're way longer than 10.
Yeah, and he's a great writer.
Yeah,
too.
So it's
it's kind of strong suit.
Okay, you're going to stop directing movies, but if I was a young filmmaker and Quentin Tarantino was like, here's a script, I want you to direct it, I'd be like, cool, will you be on set with me every single day and also tell me what to do? You know, like by proxy, he's probably going to end up making way more than just 10 films, but
yeah.
I don't know.
But you have people like Dev Patel. young.
Yeah,
made a movie,
absolutely.
Doing really well.
But, like it's, but he's also being propped up by like Jordan Peele, by older, not that Jordan Peele is really all that old in the scope
he's
of directors right now, but somebody who's a little bit more established. Mm-hmm. Like, and Jordan Peele's still making movies. It feels like you can do both instead of just doing one. But next on the docket, you know, another big piece of news that ties in with one of our movies that we're talking about today is the use of AI in marketing and films.
Womp womp.
Yeah, for real.
Especially for James here, the artist of the three of us.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess, James, you want to start it off? How do you feel about them using... We can talk about The Devil... What's the movie called? The Devil...
In a blue dress.
No, it's about... It's the talk show Where's 70s.
Prada? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it
came out like 2 years
ago.
Yeah, Late Night with the Devil. We can talk about that a little bit, too, because I know that that was actually in the film. This is just marketing materials, but...
Yeah, I mean... The thing about like art is that like the meta of it, I guess, like the surrounding world of it, like the circumstance of it being made is kind of what makes AI art kind of lousy. So if you're making a world in which everything sucks, like Late Night with the Devil is supposed to be like kind of scary, like, and supposed to be a little unsettling, it makes a little bit of sense to kind of put it in there. But at the same time, like, we talk about like giving young creators voices and stuff like that, and A24 could, like, people would have made an A24 poster for free just to put it in their portfolio. And I know that it's like kind of sleazy to be like, you're doing this for exposure, but I don't know, like, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. And I think
we need to context this, that there were Civil War posters that were released that have been pointed out as being AI. If you kind of glance at them, you won't notice, but people have kind of tracked down a lot of the backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And the thing that boggles my mind is it's such a beautiful movie that you could just take a shot of and then put the movie name on it, to make fake.
They did that with The Whale.
Mm-hmm. And in the argument that they give in the...
just use the one frame over
it. It is true. The argument that they give in the Hollywood Reporter article that I... Or the argument that they give in the Hollywood Reporter article that I sent you both before this, they have a quote from... a source that is basically like it reads like somebody who worked on the marketing team basically saying like, oh well, these are AI images inspired by the movie, and quote, the entire movie is a big what if, so we wanted to continue that on a social that thought on social powerful imagery of iconic landmarks within that dystopian realism. So like showing you destroyed whatever or cities that aren't in the film, right? So you can't just pull a clip from the movie because we don't see LA in the film, but like that's like a lame excuse.
Yeah,
like
you're making that
very easily.
That's the meta that I'm talking about, like that is not a good reason,
right?
And there's no way to like kind of, it's a purely subjective thing.
If that's your goal and intent, then it should be clear that it's AI from the start. They shouldn't have waited for people to be like, hey, what is this?
Yeah.
And then come and up then with a press release. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that also would have fit more if it were a film about fake news and like manipulation of media
or like digital takeover if that was a
and I think that speaks to a bigger problem, and we can get a little bit more into the Civil War discussion now just as a whole, but like one of my bigger takeaways from this movie is that I think that the marketing team kind of shot this film in the leg, not to, you know, like bring violence from a violent movie into my vernacular, but I just think that the movie was marketed, like looking at the trailer, looking at some of these posters, like it's very marketed as like a war film.
Yeah, war movie, like action thriller.
Yeah, and it is, while thrilling in a lot of different parts, I found.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that, and I think that does a major disservice to this movie. I think that I to be totally clear with everybody, I saw this movie 3 hours ago, 4 hours ago, so I'm still processing a lot of it because I think it had a lot to offer in terms of things to think about. I don't know how much it had to say about war, which kind of was, I know, something that people talked about, some people that we saw or that we know who saw it talked about not really enjoying the fact that it didn't really have a political commentary in terms of like the actual violence and conflict that was going on. But I don't know, I just think that like had it been more clear from the marketing materials that this is a maybe a slower journalism, almost like a road trip movie.
But would that get butts in seats? Because in terms of the goal of getting butts in seats, I think that the marketing,
it worked.
Yeah, that's,
it's just how much you value the honesty of their marketing.
Yeah.
Like people like us are going to see it regardless, but in terms of like the mass market, people are more likely to see a future war politically, they think will be politically divisive movie than a photojournalist movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question because I like I said, or like you just said, we were going to see it regardless, so I don't know.
It's funny to bring up the honesty and the intent of the marketing when we just yeah. talked about the AI.
Yeah. So I guess that's true. We can't trust them at
all. Butts and seats, baby.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you guys... Yeah, Chris.
You brought up something good about it being like Whiplash.
Yeah, that was... We could get into the movie review now, but essentially my takeaway when we were with our friend and he was like, there's no point of the movie, and I was like, no, I think this is a movie... For me, it's about like being an artist, and that it's like point and message is closer to Whiplash than the intent of a different kind of movie. Like, it's about like dying for your artistic goals. Did it achieve that in a way that I was happy about? No.
Yeah.
But is that what they were doing? I think I'm pretty confident.
Well, yeah. I mean, they make it pretty clear when Kirsten Dunst's character basically speaks the thesis of the movie when they're on the couch at the beginning portion of that, where she's like, "Well, I spent my whole career overseas in different war-torn regions taking pictures and sending them home thinking of this as a warning, and it is now dawning on me that no one was listening." I think that's really interesting. I don't know how much it actually, for me, delivered on that thesis. I think that I thought it was cool to go through the different locations that they were going to and meeting the different people and seeing how different people were reacting to a war.
I found scene per scene, this was a very strong movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were in like a film class and they played a 5-minute scene from this movie, it'd be like, wow, this is like so intriguing and interesting, and it like fully delivers each set piece individually. But through the string, especially through the characters, I think that's kind of where the movie falls apart. I think it's four of virtually the same character, just at different points in life.
Yeah. Well, one of them does interviews. One of them takes pictures. Like, the other one takes pictures.
But like they
the
have
other one's a writer.
They all have the same motivation and intention, which is kind of weak and not fleshed out enough.
Yeah.
Also, how old did you think that the youngest was?
Oh, I thought she was. To be clear, like, I work as a photographer for a news organization, so this movie was built for me. I thought that she was my age. Like I watched and I was like, oh, she looks just like me.
He thought she was 12.
If they had not stated her age in the film, I would have spent the entire movie thinking that she was a 12-year-old girl.
Yep.
And I thought that's what the conflict was going to be, was Kirsten Dunst being like, you can't take this
child.
Kid. She's like in middle school. Instead, she was like, you can't take this kid. She's 23. And I was like, she's what?
I thought that she was... I don't know. Her character was really interesting. I thought Kaylee Spani was really good, but I don't know.
My big thing about it was with regards to like it being strong scene for scene. I mentioned it when we got in after the movie, but I think that I really would have liked this movie more if every sequence was released weekly, potentially as like a graphic novel, even like it just like
James would have loved this movie if it was an email.
It was brought up that like a lot of the conflicts scene per scene were a little contrived, like a contrived conflict
like,
was introduced.
Like go to point X, so X so point.
Yeah. Oh,
y
I've got to jump in someone else's car for fun.
Yeah, yes.
Like that's such
that was crazy.
That was so funny. But
even if the world was falling apart, I would never do that.
But with regards to like kind of getting the punch of the movie, it was like, you know, we talk about it's a movie about making art. And I feel like what they're trying to push is that this photojournalism thing, especially in war, is like a really intense thing. It's a super intense thing. And like the stakes involved in that art is like it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
But I feel like any sort of impression of that was kind of completely undermined by them cutting to like silly music, like at different moments or like having like kind of almost quippy banter. Yeah. Like I was like, it doesn't seem like you guys are taking this seriously.
It's an interesting thing just having been in not nearly as intensive situations like that, but having been to like shooting scenes and having seen like bodies and stuff. It is a very, I actually do think that in some instances, I don't think it worked every time in the film, but there are instances where like it is kind of like the reporters and photographers and what have you have to exist in this weird bubble of being present in the scene but not being a part of what is going on. And so like part of the way that a lot of people maintain that is by making jokes and being quippy, and like sometimes in this movie and sometimes even in real life, like it feels a little Marvelish, like a little, oh, he's right behind me, isn't he, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that like while that is true, sometimes it doesn't work in a film context, because sometimes like movies you don't have a conversation in film the way you have a conversation in real life. That's just not right. Like the way we're having a conversation right now isn't the way that we talk as friends sitting on the couch. And so I think that sometimes it's a hard thing to nail, especially when you're trying to present four characters as interesting when the goals of those characters are to be uninteresting, to not be the story, right? And I think that it in a lot of the scenes, it rides those lines, and it does interesting things. Like, I thought the Jesse Plemons scene was easily the most, like, enthralling, thrilling scene in the movie, and probably because Jesse Plemons is maybe one of the top three most talented actors in our generation right now. He wasn't even supposed to be in the movie, by the way.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
The cast member dropped out, and then he's married to Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And Kirsten was like, Jesse could do this. My only issue with that movie was that I was so excited that Jesse Plemons was on screen and like had like charisma compared to everyone else that I was just like,
yeah.
The tension wasn't there because I was so happy that an actor with charisma. Yeah. Like, Kirsten Dunst did a great job, but I in terms of just like power as an actor,
he holds a screen. I like that scene.
I
to
had
me
never
was really
heard of him until I became like until I saw Killers.
Oh, you got to check out Game Night. He's unreal in Game Night.
That movie's
awesome.
That's a comedy actor for him. He's great.
He's just in my head as the guy that you guys like.
Yeah.
And that's
he's awesome. He's like, I don't know. You know how people sometimes describe like rappers as like, oh, this is your like rapper's favorite rapper?
Yeah.
I think that he probably is like that, where I don't think yet he has done a film in which he's the center movie star.
Mm.
But then like once you start noticing like, oh my God, this guy's in every movie I watch for 15 minutes and he's maybe those are the best 15 minutes. It's like you start to put it together and you're like, wow, maybe he's just really, really talented. I thought he was awesome. I thought that it was crazy that Kaylee Spaney's character was shooting on film. Crazy. My first question was like, where do you get it developed? And then she got it, she was developing it herself. But then, where do you get more?
That wasn't a market that was suffering.
I guess not.
I think they kind of like made it clear that they were well off and had a lot of money and had a lot of means.
Yeah.
So I was willing to forgive that they probably just had a lot to spare. To the point you bring up earlier about like the quippiness, I think if all the characters in the movie were mute, it would have been better. Because the imagery was just so strong.
Really,
the imagery was so fantastic.
Yeah.
Throughout, from start to finish, the like atmosphere and world building and like visual.
Yeah.
Image that they were going for, they nailed the whole time.
Yeah. The one that made me like really sit back and go like, damn, was the fire scene.
Where they're
driving through the forest that's on fire right before Sammy dies. And I was just like, this is like, yeah. Like I was like here for it. And it was one of the few music choices that I thought played really well. I thought some of them were like you brought it up, James, kind of missed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that like it was like more of a folksy song, and it felt like it was saying something about like, look what American life has become.
Yeah,
it was it was like pretty destruction.
Yeah,
like it was like both visually like beautiful and like important in the intention of the movie.
And like you just mentioned, none of the characters were talking.
Yeah,
Sammy certainly wasn't.
No. Wow. I love that guy.
I do too.
He's awesome. Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Right in Dune.
Yeah. Well. They kicked him out of Dune. Yeah. I thought one of the other elements that really worked for me, despite gunshots, gunshots in a movie theater, they just make me jump every single time. I thought the sound design was really impressive.
I know you want to talk about it
because you're a sound guy. So I wanted to set it up because I just like there were a lot of times where either there was no sound in a really effective way, like the scene towards the end, right before they move into the final act. In DC, where Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spaney's characters have like a heart to heart in that by that lake, I thought was really well done because it had been so loud because they're at the base and then all of a sudden they're in the woods and it's really quiet but like in a really intense way. I thought.
The gun sequences from a sound design perspective made me so happy and they were so fantastic. Interchanging like gunshots. With like camera, like when they would take a picture and it would be in like line with the gunshots was fantastic. Both in like the way that they were kind of trying to express something with the cameras, as they were kind of setting up the journalists as soldiers in a way in a lot of the shots, like gunfire mixed with camera shots and then like a gunshot and an image would appear and then disappear at the next gunshot.
Yeah.
That's just good design. That's fantastic work.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to bring up, James?
No, I like it when Kirsten Dunst got like spider sense. You know, when the yeah. you know, and then the little girl got it at the end.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
the most realistic depiction of a panic attack ever.
That was, I really liked it at the end when she was like, all right, time to lock in. And she snapped out
yeah,
of
she
that
locked
and
in.
Was just like, time to go. I know that he's not in, the, yeah. in those cars, which like everybody should have known he's not in those cars, by the way.
I was really, really excited for Kirsten Dunst to like do something like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, and to just like
yeah.
give it all up in that moment where she was having that breakdown. But
I don't think that was the path of her character.
No,
I don't think so either.
I just would have liked to have seen that, other than the path that I already knew was going to happen.
Yeah, that,
like
that,
when those cars came out, I was like, I know the presence of those cars.
Yeah. Hey, Nick Offerman, good for you, man. Make that money.
Yeah, he was really just there.
Yeah. Like, do you think that like if I was Nick Offerman and I was starting, not that he's old, but like starting to get older and starting to like gray the way he is, I'd just be like, I'll just be the president and everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Like, everybody already associates me with Ron Swanson, who is like Mr. America.
Yeah.
You know, I might as well just bite into the bit, be the president all the time, and make a ton of money. Be able to, he like lives on a farm and woodworks in his free time.
Yeah.
So I,
awesome.
Yeah. What'd you guys think? Did you read that thing about those pictures in that they used were the ones that Kaylee Spani and Kirsten Dunst were taking?
Oh, that's awesome,
right?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was
they were good
that,
pictures.
They were really good.
They were
pictures,
really good pictures.
Like
side game.
Damn,
for
yeah.
The
right.
Yeah.
I thought that was really impressive, and I thought that that was an interesting, like, directorial choice to have them.
It was great.
Really be focused, and I think that like for me as somebody who takes pictures, like, or who takes them intentionally, I guess, because everybody takes pictures, but
for money.
Yeah. Professionally,
yeah.
One might say.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but. I thought that it actually made the acting of them using the cameras way, way better. I thought that like
that
them
sense.
Knowing
yeah.
that their stuff was going to be used, I think was a really smart choice.
Yeah,
so,
true.
Yeah. Okay. Any other overall thoughts on Civil War?
I guess I'm uncertain of where all of us are feeling at the end of this movie.
I was
movie,
hoping that I was going to figure it out by the end of this discussion, but I don't know if I have.
Like, I am left feeling as though like everything good that kind of happened was undercut at some point in the movie. Mm. Doesn't mean like the good parts weren't good,
yeah.
but like they did not they didn't go together as a cake. Mm-hmm. It's just a bunch of ingredients together.
Yeah, I think that it probably for me requires a second viewing. Now knowing, like I said at the beginning, that it's kind of a road trip movie, like it's like four like character archetype kind of things ish. You have like the super young person, the super old person,
like iterations on the same
kind of put in a car, and they have to go through different vignettes. I think viewing it through that lens, viewing it through the like maybe this should have been released weekly and been fleshed out a little bit more, I think it still works on a smaller sub 2-hour film basis. And so I think that it leaves me overall pleased with the movie. I don't think that it like I've talked to some people that are like, this is astounding, and it didn't land for me on that level. I think I was still left. I could have used a little bit of explanation of what was politically happening, not necessarily side taking, but like I was a little lost.
I think that was intentional and important.
Yeah.
I think as soon as you throw in anything, you throw in any piece of why they're fighting, it becomes like your brain is going to take a side.
Yeah.
And the movie kind of lives on you not taking a side.
Yeah, I know it really wants you to not do that, and I think that I respect the choice. I don't know if it helped me engage so much, right? Like, I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but I land in muddied but positive waters.
Inside of... This movie has two wolves inside of it. One of it is a fantastic movie, and one of it is, like, a poorly written, kind of mellowed, bad character drama. It like, the visual storytelling is, like, massively beautiful and like perfect, and atmosphere and scenic design and everything. Mm-hmm. Again, like scene per scene, I adore this movie, and it's like a 9 out of 10, but it like you put it all together and it's like a 6. Yeah. I just really did not care for any of the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because it was like one character 4 times.
Yeah. Well, neither did the characters care, because when Kirsten Dunst's character dies, they're just like, time to rock and roll.
Which is like the, and
like,
it's,
yeah,
that's the whole thing.
The
is that,
it is the point.
Like they had, they set up
broken.
The like, when she's like, if I die, you take a photo of me, and then it's the reverse happens, and it's like, I see what we're doing.
I saw that coming from miles away.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah,
I'm going to shoot her.
But it's like a great screenplay and a bad script.
Interesting.
I guess that's where I land on
maybe.
It.
Maybe.
It needs to be weekly.
But I think I might be more positive on it on a rewatch.
That's fine. So. Like I get it.
Speaking of films I rewatched, The Cameraman.
Has James given his final?
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like I mentioned, the sequences I think would have been like better released weekly, just because it did not feel like it like flowed somehow, because every transition from one thing to the next felt like it just like discounted mm-hmm. some other part. So
yeah,
I don't know. That's it.
There we go. Yeah. Hey, that's Civil War. If you enjoyed this conversation, feel free to go check it out. Although we totally spoiled most of it, so if you hadn't seen it already, tough luck. The Cameraman, 1928, directed by Buster Keaton.
And
Edward Sedgwick, I believe, is who directed it with him. This was the final.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Edward Sedgwick.
Now, in a way, the characters are mute in this one.
In a way.
In a way.
They were barred by technology. Chris, you pointed this out to me when we were discussing it a couple of days ago, because this was not the original pick for what we were going to watch this week. It was going to be a Buster Keaton movie, but we were going to watch The General, which in some ways, neither of you have seen it.
No.
So in some ways, it's a better pick, but in other ways, I don't think it is. Like, I think that either one of these, basically The General's plot is that he's a Confederate train driver during the Civil War in the U.S., and his train gets hijacked by Union soldiers, and his like love interest is on that train, and so he basically spends the entire movie doing silly stunts and stuff trying to get his train back.
It's funny,
and it like happens within the background of the Civil War.
You, Tomas, and me both watched Civil War movies about the actual Civil War in America, unrelated to what we were watching.
Yeah.
This week.
Yep. Wait, what else did you? Oh, I watched
Gone with the
Wind.
Wind.
That's right.
We both
watched
Confederate favoring.
Yeah.
Civil War movies this week.
Yeah. I'd like to come out now and say that we are not a fan of those views.
Not a fan.
Let's get ahead of that. The Cameraman, though, takes a different angle. He is Buster Keaton's character, whose name is something, but it's
Buster.
It's usually Buster.
It's unimportant to the plot. Because in general, it's something else.
General
but anyways,
Buster.
he's a photographer who takes up newsreel shooting to impress a secretary, you know, as we all do.
As you did.
As I did, that's right. That's how I got into my line of work. Okay, so if you're curious about what I do for work, it's basically what he does in this film, minus the pool scene.
And the monkey.
You haven't seen me at work.
Yeah.
But this movie has a very different take on photojournalism and its importance in society. What'd you guys think of The Cameraman?
I think that it's one of those where I think that if I think too deep, it's not that like if I think too deep about it, it'll like stop holding weight. It's just that like I don't think that it was made to think too hard about to me. I it was just pleasant. It was entirely enjoyable.
Yeah, I've seen now like three Chaplins and two Keatons, and they all have a very kind of rigid structure.
Yeah.
Of like a silly man falls in love.
They had a formula, and it worked.
And it worked. Yeah.
God damn it, it worked.
That silly silent man who's like always smaller than everyone else on set and is just...
It's crazy how small he is.
Yeah.
He's 5'5".
Yeah, Chaplin's small, too. They're short guys, and they get up to nonsensical whimsy.
That's what makes them bounce.
one of my notes that I wrote, because I watched The Cameraman and then was like, oh, this is definitely maybe a more fun and maybe a little bit more like journalism themed pick, so maybe we'll pivot to this. We need more people to fall down in modern films. Like there's a sequence in this where he's like just walking on the sidewalk and he just falls. And
he slips on a banana peel.
He slips
on a banana peel. It's crazy.
That prompts that. It just falls and it's silly and funny and it's like, what happened to us? We used to be fun. We used to slip on banana peels.
What are comedies now? Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire?
Ooh, thank God we didn't talk about that movie.
It's not a comedy.
I really like this movie. I think that I've mentioned it a little bit, but after watching The General first, I watched Sherlock Jr., which Chris, I know you saw, and then this one. And I think that this one is certainly the least spectacle-y of the three.
Yeah.
The other two have far bigger stunts. Mm. But I cannot get over the physicality of Buster Keaton. And like it translates to Charlie Chaplin too. I just don't think off the top of my head now I can name three people who could do this.
I think it's because you don't have to anymore.
Yeah.
Like you can achieve all of this with like Chris Hemsworth and like a computer.
Not to the same effect, I don't think.
You mean like CG stunts?
Yeah.
Oh, the actual stunts, sure. But I think I don't know. I think that there's something that makes, like, even the little, like, the little moments about these movies, like his facial expressions are so, he doesn't make a lot of them. So when he does, I think they're so poignant and do such a good job at conveying what he is thinking. They're like, there are very few people now that I think can do that. And also, like, do the, like, the big fight scene thing. You know what I mean? Like, that to me, I just, like, the baseball scene, not to bring baseball into this. But
we were watching this, and I said, no wonder what Tomas wanted to change the movie pick to this movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought the baseball scene was maybe the most, like, perfectly nailed baseball movements with no props.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was incredible. Yeah. So impressive.
Incredible monkey acting.
I was
a very
astounded.
Talented monkey.
Yeah. For I don't know if, like, how monkeys have developed in their acting scene.
Well, they've probably got.
Well, that's
years.
The kind of monkey. That's the Night Museum monkey. I don't know what kind of monkey that is, but they must be like fantastically trainable.
Do you think they're credited in the thing?
I would hope so. That would be really disappointing if they weren't. I think that to your point, Tomas, about the limited facial expressions, it's also a case of like every other character in this movie was so expressive, expressive that like Buster Keaton had to be the sounding board, and that way it kind of made him the straight man by having like not I don't want to say like little personality but like his tone throughout the entire thing was curious. It was like it was just like a curiosity within himself that like he wasn't overacting and that sort of thing. And I think that it fed that this idea that like the whole movie just kind of feels like an exploration of like how silly can we get with a camera prop and this just kind of like klutz character. In situations of like recording different things, going to a baseball diamond, like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he hits people with the camera like so many times and every single time I chuckled. Like it was like, you know,
every time he broke that window, I'd laugh.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
It's just that sort of thing where like the whole movie is just like, how many ideas can we pull out of this one concept?
Yeah.
And Buster Keaton is like a perfect template for that.
Josephine the monkey.
Josephine.
Starred in The Circus with Charlie Chaplin, Arabian Nights.
Oh wow, this is a
the
star. This
wow.
this
and
monkey seen
called
some
the
stars.
Kid Brother. Yeah, this I'm reading. I'm looking at this article that's titled That Monkey, and it's like I was watching some old movies and started to notice the same looking monkey in all of these like really great old movies. Turns out it's Josephine.
Huh.
Had a long and storied career.
Good for Josephine
in filmmaking.
Get that monkey an Oscar.
Yeah.
That was, and also, like, seamless introduction of the character, I gotta say. Like, it was not a one-off thing. It became crucial late in the movie, but I was, like, down for it. I was like, this didn't need to be introduced earlier.
No. I think that the movie establishes enough, like, silliness pretty early on that, like, oh, a monkey showed up. Cool. I'm here.
I'm here with it.
You know what I mean? It didn't feel out of left field.
No. Tasteful monkey.
Thank you.
It's so like you take out like the Chaplin or the Keaton, and the surrounding characters are just the same characters they always were in the 20s, like the Popeye, like girl and Big Man, Minnie Mouse and Pete the Cat.
Yeah.
Like it's all this. It's woman who is there and likes the guy, and then Big Man that also likes the girl. Mm-hmm. It's just what it is
like
in every movie.
It's a perfect story.
There was something funny. I can't remember which title card it was on, but they like made jokes in the title cards. Which is
they did that
all of the misspeaking, like
yes.
the cop misspeaking.
Yes, the like which house is on fire? A witch's house on fire?
Yeah.
No, up there there's a fire down here. And like it's funny.
Sherlock
Jr. Awesome.
Did that as well. It made me laugh. And he was like he solved the case aside from finding the missing jewels and finding the criminal that stole them. like that was the title.
It's just like such simple stuff that it works nearly 100 years later. Like, this movie is 96 years old.
I looked into it. You watched it on the 19th. It released April 17th, 2024.
Wow.
Sherlock Jr. did.
Oh.
So that movie is 104 days old.
That's
100
awesome.
Years, 4 days.
And there's some stunts in those movies. Like I said.
The house?
No.
I think that's a general.
No, it didn't happen in the
general. Oh, okay.
So it happened in a different one.
Oh,
but
wow.
there are some things that Buster Keaton does that just, like, astound me.
Yeah.
That I don't, I do, like, there's Chris has seen it, but in Sherlock Jr., there's a part where he's being chased, and somebody is standing there with an open suitcase in front of. I've told you both about this because it's astounded me for days. But he jumps through this suitcase that this person's holding in front of them, and then disappears. And I don't want to Google how they did it.
And there's like a wall behind the person that he's then behind, and it like pivots. But you'd have seen it pivot, so there has to be like a second way that door gets.
It's just stunning.
I'll have to watch this movie.
Crazy stuff. There's a lot that makes you think about, like, it makes you think about the AI stuff now, right? And you think that, like, God, are we lazy to the point where we can't make posters now? And they were doing stuff like this 100 years ago.
The monkey.
Like, they had just figured out electricity.
We and James joked that he's, like, looking for a camera, like, a video camera, and he goes to, like, an antique video camera store. Yeah, it's like, how antique could these video cameras be?
Like, oh, wow, it's vintage. It's 4 years old.
The other thing that made me laugh is that cameras, despite everything else, price is changing for everything. Cameras are still like $3,000. Like, same price. That hasn't changed.
I enjoyed how much cheaper the camera got when he brought it back the second time. Like, obviously it was used again, but it was shorter because all the legs got shot.
They really, that was really funny. Like, the mileage they get out of everything. Like, the camera being such a, like, the two legs that's, getting shot out and then them holding the third
thing.
Leg out.
I have so much trouble with my tripod.
I loved when he was shooting the war in Chinatown and, like, the Chinese, like, crime lord or whatever, like, would send a guy after him and he would inevitably fail, and there was just a line of people. Like, a guy went out with a knife and then a gun and then another knife and then, like, a cutlass, and, like, it was awesome.
The monkey stabs him in the butt. It's great.
Good stuff.
That was great.
This is he's the original Nightcrawler.
Yeah, I did notice that.
Have you seen those reviews that are like, he is the first Nightcrawler?
Oh, I didn't see those. I just, when he would, like, mess with it, I was, I thought that was pretty funny. I was really hoping that the monkey was going to get a dialogue card.
That might have been a little too advanced for them.
Too advanced?
Yeah.
Planet of the Apes didn't come out for another 40 years.
The part where the electric boat hits the wooden boat and then 5 seconds pass and then it explodes.
I did not know whether the motorboat or the wooden boat exploded.
I thought the wooden boat exploded.
So I was, but either way, I was like, yeah, man.
Yeah. The scene with, and we're just naming scenes now. Yeah, but, like, that's kind of the, like, that's all there is to this movie, which is, like you mentioned, like, it's just such a pleasant viewing experience.
I don't think it's trying to say much.
Would you have liked this one if it was released 5 minutes at a time in a graphic novel,
like a Looney Tunes
honestly
short?
Yeah. I would have.
Could this movie be an email?
No, it couldn't have. No, it could have been a sequence of GIFs.
I could watch this movie on TikTok.
Yeah,
that these movies are primed to be put on TikTok in like
somebody
parts.
You get on that before we release this so you can make that TikTok money.
The AI and the TikTok discussion of these two movies.
You stop watching the Kevin Costner Draft Day movie on TikTok in parts.
Oh, there's nothing like TikTok sports movies.
It's like the goat. Like it's. Sports movies
are built for Subway TikTok. Surfers and TikTok. Hey, what would you do if you were in a dressing room and another guy got thrown into it and then he was like, "What are you doing in my dressing room?" And then changing.
That scene was the worst scene for me in the movie because I was just so annoyed that was happening.
I couldn't believe the mileage they got out of the idea of. You hung this up on my hook, and then it fell. And then I put it back, and then it fell.
I just can't get over going to the pool in a 6-piece suit.
You have to change. It takes so long to change. And then
where
you gotta,
do you put your stuff?
And then you got to get
on
like,
my hook. Apparently,
put the suit back on after the pool.
When that he lost his swimming suit, and then that lady walked out. And it was clearly done that he had a plan in his head. And I was like, Buster, what are you about to do?
Oh, Buster.
But he ended up with just the pants, which news to me.
Oh, and boy, can Buster Keaton run.
Man, the stairs sequence where he's running up and down, like, basically a full building.
Yeah.
Another one of those where I'm like, is this a set? Are these multiple compositions being strung together? Like,
no
I'm
way.
Not really sure how
they're just like a camera
this.
Moving
like,
up
moving
and down.
Up and down a big building, like, I don't know how they filmed it, so funny.
Yeah. And yeah. Like you and can, went up to the roof.
Yeah, and like you can with older films, just the way that I don't know if it's the way that they were recorded or the way that the film reel played. It has a natural, if you watch it, it has like a natural, people are moving in not an unnatural way, but it feels like they're moving a little bit faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that you can get away with some of these movies with speeding it up. And like they do that and it's well documented in many.
Is that like a frame rate thing?
I think it's a frame rate thing, but I don't know. Yeah, like part
like
of
are you,
is like,
are you turning
are you
the knob
fast?
I believe that is the reason, is if you crank it at a different speed, yeah, it will capture footage at a different
speed.
So,
well, what I think is interesting is that it allows you to play things even faster, right? So that him going up down those stairs definitely played at a higher speed, yeah, than mm-hmm, the other stuff, but it didn't feel like sometimes in movies now, when stuff goes to a higher frame rate or a lower frame rate, it feels like it has to be like a oh, we're making this big choice right now to use a different speed.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get away with that way easier. Than,
anytime
it doesn't
he's
feel
running.
Like a grand choice.
When
yeah.
he runs from his house to the girl's house, like 6 blocks in yeah. like 30 seconds. Yeah.
That was great.
New York City is was that New York?
Probably.
It felt New York.
Oh, he went to see the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, it could have been Brooklyn. Were they still in...
I believe that's.
I don't
oh,
know.
I guess
I
Brooklyn,
know.
Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Brooklyn is in New York.
We thought of the Yankees playing.
I thought you were.
I was thinking,
man.
I was thinking. I was thinking Manhattan, and then, anyways. different places, guys. They're different. They're very far away.
They're
from
both in New York.
Yeah. Anyways, that's crazy. What the cities used to look like that. That was like something that I thought about. Like, wow, the roads are huge.
Yeah.
Why does it feel like roads are smaller?
It's because people are parked on the sides of them
yeah,
now.
Yeah, probably. That's crazy. Yeah. That's
so,
crazy.
So
that's
roads,
what it used
yeah.
to look like.
Bang.
Man.
Yeah.
Infrastructure as well. Wild.
I kind of liked the... I was a real big fan of the police officer who seemed to be upset that he was running.
Yeah, he did not... I mean, like, the riding on, like, the sides of cars thing, you can be a little upset about.
That
but the running
sense.
Thing, he was not cool with.
I thought he was going to get him on, like, breaking a speed limit. I thought I was going to learn about, like, a walking speed limit.
He was running
they do that,
so
they
fast.
Do that gag in Sherlock Jr.
Do they?
Yeah.
Well, he's, like, running, and then a cop yeah. pulls up.
That's funny.
And points at, like, the speedometer.
I thought I was going to learn about an old-timey law that you no. could not run.
Well, he was just mad because of the first time, right? It's the same cop the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just mad at him.
No, I understand. Yeah. I really thought he was going
to... has to check his knee reaction
because
speed.
Because if he doesn't have reflexes, he's broken.
Yeah. He's goofy.
Yeah, he's goofy. That's what it was.
It was a goofy check.
Yeah. Goofy check.
And then Buster turned it on him. Maybe I'm goofy. Yeah, that was
really
funny.
Makes you think.
Really.
I think
really
my favorite visual gag was when he was pouring water out of the car with his hat. Like he was in
oh,
the
yes, yes. And then he put the hat
and
on.
Then he put it on.
When spend any, the rest of this episode just going scene by scene.
Anytime in these movies, any of the three that I have watched that Buster Keaton is like soaking wet is a really good gag. And it happens way more often than it probably should.
Anytime there's a vehicle involved, it's a good
yeah.
It's a good gag.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a, I don't know. Is there anything that we have on these two films as like a unit?
In a way, like the nuance that makes this film come together says nothing deep. You know, so it's so
no,
hard
but it's
to,
not
like,
supposed to.
No,
like, it's not yeah. supposed to, but it just makes it hard to talk about. But it's very easy to appreciate, but yeah. very hard to, like, yeah. I don't know, talk about, like, a greater mm-hmm. thing going on.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny. The movie opens up with scenes from, like, war, and it's like, these are our greatest communicators. The
yeah.
people who, like, send our reels from home. And then there's people who make tintypes, and it's Buster Keaton being mm-hmm. like, you want your portrait taken?
I guess in both films include shooting on film.
These are both scene-per-scene movies.
Yeah, and how like, how it works one way and doesn't the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
like
yeah.
yes, yeah. yeah. In the cameraman, yeah. it's scene per scene because it's like five Popeye cartoons back to back. Like that's just what it is. But then when you're trying to like do this whole message in Civil War about like photographers mm-hmm. and like kind of framing them as like soldiers of war and dying for your art form, that doing a scene per scene episodic
yeah.
thing doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Buster Keaton standing in the middle of a gunfight in Chinatown, just like
just rolling,
his, like, chewing gum, checking
yeah.
his watch,
like getting involved too.
Like, yeah, yeah,
like yeah, and then like you have like Kirsten Dunst like holding a uh-huh. camera like a gun in between like three soldiers on both sides. It's like,
and somehow I was so much more engaged with
Buster Keaton. I couldn't believe, not to go all the way back to Civil War, but couldn't believe that none of them had weapons on them.
Well, isn't that like a taboo?
I think that would probably be the thing, like with you, the vest and the helmet. It's like I am a reporter.
Yeah, but like, not even in the car.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Yeah, in the car. Yeah,
like
you're
like
right.
for the exact situation where the Jesse Plemons thing happens, where yeah. like you're not protected.
You're right. I thought you meant like going into the battlefield to take pictures. Yeah. I was like, well, that would make them shootable.
Yeah.
You know, like in a more reasonable sense.
I mean, well, she still got shot, but
yeah. I didn't buy that. Also,
what?
She got shot.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I didn't see any blood. I didn't see. She just. It just looks like someone pushed.
Well,
her.
They were still images.
I hear you, but like, I would have. And she also like landed like just on her back with her arms at her sides. And I get that like. What's the young actress's name?
Kaylee Spaney.
Kaylee just kind of pushed her off of her.
I understand what you're saying, but I thought that sequence was so pretty.
It was
and
pretty.
Like was so shot, like it was so like thematically well shot that you just gotta like throw away your, like you gotta not
throw away involvement with the film.
You know, just like that's a suspension of disbelief thing. The not seeing like just like the oh she fell in yeah she fell in a cinematic way because it's. Then you can get those still image pictures of her falling towards her. Like you just,
you're right. I just like a pool of blood. Anything. Like also, it didn't help. This is also probably like touching upon like the emotional stakes that for me just were not there, like at all. Like I like again like the gruesomeness of this all. I was just kind of taken out of because I was like, you know, it's funny when I watched Whiplash, I was like, this is a really really good movie, and my enjoyment of it can only be taken so far by how unappealing these people are. Which is not the movie's fault because that's the point.
Yeah, you struggle with that more than I did.
I was just like not into any of it because it felt like the movie was doing things that made me not want to go for it, I guess. I don't
love that movie so much.
Whiplash?
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
I love that movie.
It's a great
so
movie.
Much. And yeah, it's just like it's about like sort of dying for your art.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it tells it perfectly. Like I swear I feel like there's a million movies about throwing yourself at your art, and we did it, guys.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing.
We're already there
to view a like journalism, like that stuff as art. Like it's a really because like it is.
Yeah,
but it's very. I don't know. There, it's hard to treat it like that sometimes, where like it's so much of it is about capturing what's happening versus intentionally doing X, Y, and Z. That I think that like it being painted as that in the film. Was like an interesting way to view it when you weren't going to take stances on a lot of other stuff. I don't know. To me, that was something that I thought was interesting. Not that it was wrong. I just thought that was an interesting take on the.
I think there was a lot of swings and misses. It's really a Ghostbusters Frozen Empire kind of.
Yeah.
I think that it like we made a lot of good choices that could have gotten to us to a a good conclusion and product, but we just kind of. Oh, we'll get them next time.
Yeah. I might not give Ghostbusters the same.
No, they were
different
trying.
Swings I will and misses.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire absolutely swung.
It did swing, yeah.
For
two more
full
misses.
Hours. So. I thought both of the runtimes on these were pretty good, too. An hour
it was a
and
good
9
run
minutes. For
I could
the
have
cameraman.
Used, I think this could have been longer. I think
cameraman?
It could
have
been
Civil War.
No, well,
Civil
okay,
War.
Civil War, yeah.
Civil, yeah.
Really?
I just like, I think it, I don't think a character had an arc to me.
That's not true. I don't know if I'd agree with that. I think that the main character definitely grew in terms of her, like the way that she viewed what she was doing for work. I think that it changed, and I think that you saw that whether or not it like fully came to fruition. I think that you saw that in the final.
I suppose. Yeah. I guess this movie really hits a climax and then doesn't have the falling action and resolution.
Yeah,
which is like interesting. Like, it's cool when you play with structure, but also, I don't know.
I think that if it were made longer for the sake of like giving a character like an arc, every other scene would have had to have been adjusted because I feel like a lot of the other scenes, well, they did to some degree, but it's almost like, well, if you want like more character arc, that feels like you got to change more of the movie than just adding more scenes.
Well, I think they should have changed more of the movie.
Oh well, yeah.
like you have her like see like. Like she like is like gung ho about this, and then she does the thing where she sees the people at the gas station being hung up, and then you could have her go through like a like some doubt. I don't know if this is what I want to do, but she just kind of stayed gung ho, and just it was just like kind of how she approached being gung ho that changed, and I think that's kind of the failing of it for me. Well, like cause she, and then like they go like they have the gas station thing and then they go to an active battle and she takes like a fantastic photo and then we're just kind of like feeling it from that point on. Yeah. I loved the way that the military people and the guy just kind of threw people like the journalists around, like just holding them and like yanking them back. Yeah. It was great.
So,
you've been researching over there for a while, Tomas.
No, I'm trying to log into our Twitter account.
Are we banned from that too?
No, we did get banned from Instagram, though. That was tough. I haven't been able to figure that out either. So.
If you're a patron, you can follow.
That's right. That's right. We probably won't be able to get on that either.
Yeah.
So, do we have any final thoughts on The Cameraman? We sort of just went through the entire film.
Oh, yeah.
Film,
that's like the kind of movie I don't like giving a rating to.
Yeah. I just blast of a time.
Yeah.
I could put that on.
It's only pleasant.
Do some work. Knock that out. Yeah.
Like Tomas said, it's like a weaker Buster Keaton movie.
It is. Of the big three, because that one, the General and Sherlock Jr. are sort of his three big ones before he loses creative control, sort of. Because this is the first one he did as an employee or under contract with MGM Studios. The other two he did, I don't know if it was with a different studio or he just financed them himself. But he started to lose a lot of creative control.
So the Cameraman was his second to last movie.
Yeah.
And it was like his last one that he had full creative control over of his like 30 something movies he's made.
Which why you wouldn't give him creative anyways. Anyway. But
cool. I guess if I had to rate it, I'd say like an 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. But like that's just like
I give it one banana peel.
Yeah. I would probably also give it like an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's kind of it. Those are our two movies. So you guys want to talk about next week?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We got rocking and rolling next week. It's Chris's pick for what we're watching from the past.
Yeah. So we agreed that the future will be Challengers.
Challengers.
The Zendaya.
Zendaya tennis movie with Mike Feist.
Tennis movie.
Riff.
So yeah, I was looking into, you know, I couldn't think of any other tennis movies except for King Richard. So I didn't want to do King Richard. So I looked up a love triangle movie, and I landed on a very famous movie, The Graduate.
Really?
Yeah, The Graduate. Yeah.
The Graduate.
That's
I only know
pick.
The last 30 seconds of the movie, which is kind of a bummer.
Have you seen The Graduate?
I don't know. I don't think I know anything about The Graduate.
Okay.
It's a 60s
movie.
Okay. A late 60s
I like
movie.
The Graduate.
Can I see like a poster?
Yeah.
It's very likely.
It's the poster of like the leg putting a stocking on with a guy
movie,
sitting on a chair behind
it's
it.
It's the movie Mrs. Robinson comes from.
Yeah.
The song.
And also
Simon and Garfunkel do the music for this movie.
Okay. I've heard of this. Yeah, I've heard of it. Couldn't tell you a thing about
it. It's a famous movie.
It's a big one. Ooh, that's exciting. I'm excited for this.
Okay. I've been meaning to watch it for
a while. This will be fun.
So I think it'll be... These feel thematically...
Rain Man.
...of their time. Like, I feel like they're both a little, like, of their time, kind of spicy.
Okay, I thought you were like, going tennis when you told me. I didn't realize.
No, I'm not.
I like it.
Yeah.
And I like riff.
All right, so tune in next week for our Challengers
and The Graduate.
And The Graduate conversation. Ooh. Anything you guys want to, I don't know, plug, reference, recommend before we get out of here?
I watched Gone with the Wind and don't watch it or do watch it. You know if you want to watch Gone with the Wind.
Although you said you watched it on Max.
I watched it on Max and there's a 5-minute preamble about kind of what the context is in terms of racism and that it is a Confederate.
5 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Disney Plus on, I know Peter Pan has like a title card, but 5 minutes is cool. I like that they do that.
Interesting.
Super interesting stuff. If you like, just want to know a little bit more context about the movie, just pop it on Max and then turn it off after. Or watch it. It's such a weird movie to recommend. It's Confederate propaganda, but it's also like a timeless classic, so I don't know how to feel about it at the end of.
I have been, this is a bit of an out of left field pull, but I've been playing.
Nice baseball reference.
It's it's a bit of a, it's like a video game prequel to a movie.
James, don't recommend.
No, recommend it. Don't. Recommend
Why?
It. I'm here for it.
Film.
I'm here for
Why
it.
Not?
No, it doesn't have to be a film. What have you been up to?
It's a film called Tux and Fanny, and it is a very, very bizarre animated feature film that is the most dry, nothing happens
movie.
You can't hate on this because you like this movie. It is
play through it
there. So there's the movie and there is a video game that is a prequel to the movie that has recently come out, and then there's a sequel movie that I'm going to watch soon. And it's by this one guy who's made a couple other movies called like Strawberry Mansion and stuff like that. The film is Russian. He is not Russian, I don't think. I don't know why it's Russian.
We both follow him on Letterboxd.
He's awesome. A very interesting fellow, and the movie is equally interesting, I think.
He watches
like
a lot of odd
way.
Short films.
Yes, yeah, but it's I would recommend that. It's on YouTube. Like, the full thing's on YouTube. I would recommend it to anyone looking for something weird.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. The only thing that I want to recommend right now, is our social media outlets, only one of which is currently functioning, which is Twitter, which I am currently in the process of getting recovery code for.
Sure. Tune in next week to see if it stays banned.
But it is our Twitter is at 180 rule cast. Very creative. I know. I tried 180. I tried a lot of different combinations, but that's the one I comfortably settled on.
That's a fine one.
Our email is also 180rulecast@gmail.com. If anybody has any, I don't know, emails or thoughts on
we could do
what's
like
the
a cue
password.
I wish I knew. Let's hope I don't get logged out.
If we get cues, we can do a Q&A.
Yeah, if people have questions or comments or concerns, feel free to email them in, tweet at us. As soon as I get this thing, as soon as I get this code, we'll be tweeting.
My Cash App is...
So yeah, feel free to interact with us. Follow us on that. Our Instagram got banned as soon as I created it. I created it, and it was loading the app, and then it just said, sorry, you've been suspended for... like indefinitely, if you think this is a problem, appeal. And I hit appeal and it was like, well, what's your recovery email? And I had not gotten to that point of the setup account yet, of setting the account up, so I don't have a recovery, so there's no way to recover it.
Well,
which is too bad.
Well, I guess if you don't ever put an email, you can make a new.
Well, but I already have, so what I don't know is I already have 180 Rulecast as that username.
Oh, that would be great,
right? Yeah. Which would really nice consistent branding, but
180 Rulecast 2.
Yeah.
Can we true. Number our social
yeah,
media
go.
accounts?
But yeah, that's it. That's it from us. So tune in next week for Challengers and the Graduate.
All right.
Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.